Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Teachers and parents at the Alpine Union School District Board meeting on November 21st expressed frustration at the board over its handling of financial issues. 22 community members and teachers rose to speak, all criticizing the board for a proposal that asked teachers to take additional cuts while the superintendent receives a raise. The controversy arose after Superintendent Tom Pellegrino circulated an email with his version of the facts, but those are disputed by the teachers' union. Now we'll hear from Janice Mork, who was at that school board meeting on behalf of East County Magazine.
The teachers have been getting salary cuts in the early 2000s, and in 2009-2010, they accepted cutting the school year down to 178 instruction days. They've accepted having more furlough days added on as well. They've been fighting for a fair contract from the board. At the meeting, the teachers and the public expressed their views in the public comments section. All the speakers lashed out against the board or superintendent. The first to speak was Gail Malone, who called herself the proud president of the Alpine Teachers Association.
I am extremely disappointed that despite the fact the fact finder strongly recommended that all parties maintain strict confidentiality during this part of the negotiation process, Mr. Pellegrino immediately put out his version of the facts, selectively picking and choosing those facts designed to perpetuate his negative spin toward the district's dedicated, hardworking teachers.
She told the board to carefully read the fact finder's report, to get complete answers, find out what the Alpine Teachers Association was willing to do to settle this mess, and to talk to and listen to the community.
So I'm taking this opportunity to state the facts we know to be valid. While Alpine's teachers are among the most experienced, they are also among the least compensated in San Diego County. Alpine's teachers were the very first in the county to accept voluntary cuts to help mitigate the effects of the recent economic downturn. I was very unpopular with other association presidents when Alpine teachers accepted furlough days in far excess of the number agreed by most other county teachers' associations. We did it to save the jobs of the classified initially. It is disingenuous for Mr. Pellegrino to cite the burden of pain for all of Alpine's teachers' health costs, since by mutual agreement, and I've been on the negotiating team since about 1992, that the union and the district, in a series of past negotiations, we have self-funded these costs of health benefits by giving up deserved COLAs and salary increases. While the district has experienced a loss in ADA funds due to declining enrollment for the past few years, the outside consultant hired by the district to assess community birth rates has projected an insignificant decline in enrollment in the foreseeable future. Primary responsibility for the immediate fiscal situation in Alpine rests with the district for borrowing on credit for infrastructure and then incurring interest costs by failing to pass a bond issue to pay for the loan, and by other expenditures such as filling positions unnecessarily and hiring outside consultants. Alpine teachers have offered numerous concessions in order to help reach a fair and reasonable contract settlement.
Next to speak was a teacher in the district named Alita Greer. She didn't understand why there was a security officer at the meeting. Then another teacher, Jennifer Broderick, spoke. She was very upset with the superintendent and implored the board to force the superintendent back to the bargaining table.
And in all the years I've loyally served this community, I've never been so disappointed with not only the superintendent, but also the board. It's true, we face tough economic times. How we got here is a series of poor spending decisions made by the leadership here in Alpine and their inability to pass a bond measure without the help of CTA, mind you. In addition, there's not been a clear vision for Alpine schools. First, the teachers were asked to revision the schools, and we did. with the promise of grand reopenings, which did not happen. Next, technology was touted as the saving grace. All the while, teachers were being laid off. Money was spent to rewire the schools and purchase shiny new eye touches, and we all know how fleeting technology is. If you talk to the teachers, you'll find there's a tremendous amount of frustration with Alpine's technology. Furthermore, money was spent on a district website that was supposed to promote our schools and bring us into the 21st century. I can tell you, I personally spent countless unpaid hours creating a video promoting my school, as well as various pages that describe my school, our schedule, the teachers, how to contact us about our unique MVLA program. If you go to the district website, there is nothing regarding MVLA. No phone number, no video, no description, nothing. In fact, it says not found on most links. Meanwhile, a startup charter is still continuing to successfully promote themselves and siphon students and funds from our district. The above plans were poorly executed and clearly did not bring new enrollment to our district. However, the superintendent was given a raise by the board for a job well done. Being the highest paid individual in our small rural district, with both a monthly car and communication allowance, one would think decisions could be made without spending money on consultants and high-priced lawyers. As a member of the negotiating team, I can tell you that during the recent negotiations with the state fact finder, Alpine teachers made historic concessions for the good of the district and the students, despite what you may or may not have been told. What the community did not hear from the earlier County Office of Ed person is that the district did not take our historic cuts. They declined them. We were so close to a deal. I was so full of hope. And then the superintendent abruptly picked up his ball and went home. I was devastated. We gave our left arm and our right arm, but that wasn't good enough. I urge the community members to take a look at who's been there for their children throughout the decades. It's certainly not a man from Del Mar and this current board. It is the beloved teachers of Alpine Elementary, Boulder Oaks, Creekside, Joe McQueen, Mountain View, and Shadow Hills. I implore the board to force the superintendent back to the bargaining table. The students, parents, and teachers of Alpine deserve better.
The last person to speak was Lisa Hine, a parent of two special ed kids who attend the schools in the school district. She commended the teachers and told them that her kids wouldn't be where they are today if it wasn't for them.
I feel like the teachers should be paid $1 million. They're priceless. As parents, I don't know how we can walk away and not pay them enough. I have two children with special needs, and I've had nothing but incredible patience. My kids wouldn't be where they are today if it wasn't for the teachers that they've had. And I just think that shame on you guys for what you're trying to do.
Superintendent Tom Pellegrino spoke with East County Magazine after the meeting. He told us that although he received a 2.5% raise a few years ago, in July, a 7.73% reduction negated that raise. He said that he also took other cuts and added, "I'm making less than I was when I started in 2010. Asked about the meeting overall, he said the emotional testimony was not a surprise, given the district's serious financial difficulties. Of course, people are going to be angry, he concluded. If we had more money, I would be the first to give the employees more salary. But, he added, the board made it clear we need to stop spending more than we save, and I'm trying to do that. This year, we'll have a $1.35 million deficit if we don't do anything. The superintendent added that he hopes the district and the Alpine Teachers Association can come to an agreement and decide whether to go ahead with the fact finder's report or not.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio. East County teams will compete in the San Diego CIF Football Championships this weekend. The Monte Vista Monarchs will take the field Saturday at 3:30 p.m. against Sweetwater High's Red Devils, followed by a 7 p.m. matchup between Christian High Patriots and the San Marcos Knights. Both games will be played at Mesa College. East County Magazine sports writer David Dickens offers a preview analysis of these matchups. Monte Vista has a 7-5 record versus Sweetwater's 8-4 season. It has been 9 years since the Monte Vista Monarchs have been to a CIF championship final. Monte Vista's winning percentage is .225 over the last 8 years before coach Ron Hamamoto took over as head coaching duties. All Hamamoto has done throughout his coaching career is win. After defeating the La Jolla Vikings 41-24 last Friday, the Monarchs now have a rematch with the Sweetwater High Red Devils. In the last meeting, Monte Vista prevailed 34-3. This time, the stakes are higher for a Division IV championship. Sweetwater has improved since their last match and had a win over Central last week, 17-7. Monte Vista's ground attack behind lead running back Jermiel Jackson has been the winning formula offensively for this small group of underdogs. Jackson has amassed 1,237 yards and 182 carries for an average of 6.8 yards a carry and 14 rushing touchdowns. Another key to victory for the Monarchs is the small but speedy defense, led by defensive back DJ Dozer, who has 3 interceptions for 121 yards and a touchdown on the season. This rematch should be a fantastic one to watch. Look for the East County boys from Spring Valley to take home the trophy 28-14, Dickens predicts. The Christian High Patriots have a strong 11-1 record this season versus the San Marcos Knights 9-4 record. This should be a close one, Dickens predicts. Both squads have similar styles, and we could see a combined 80 points. The Christian High Patriots have scored an average of over 45 points a game, and the San Marcos Knights averaging more than 30 points per game. Typically, North County teams are favored in the CIF championship games. An edge, however, is the fact that Christian High's head coach, Jason Dexler, is very familiar with the Grossmont Conference. Texler coached the El Cajon Valley Braves for 2 years and took them to a Division II title in which they lost to Oceanside in 2005 at Qualcomm Stadium, 31-21. Christian High is no stranger to CIF championships as the team won its last Division V championship in 2011. Christian standouts to watch include running back Paris Miller. Miller is the East County's lead rusher with 977 yards, soon to be over 1,000, and averaging 122 rushing yards per game and 12 rushing touchdowns. Another standout is Miller's partner in crime, gunslinger Michael Carrillo, 216 completions on 331 passing attempts, 31 touchdowns, and an outstanding 1 interception on the season. The Christian High Patriots should come out on top, Dickens predicts, although it will be a battle. Final score predictions, Christian High 42-28. This should be the top billing to end the season.
El Cajon City Council has received 27 applications for the vacant council member position. Council members will interview applicants at the December 10th council meeting at 7 p.m. Due to the large number of applicants, council may schedule additional meetings to make their selection if extra time is needed. The council position became vacant when council member Bill Wells was appointed mayor following the resignation of former mayor Mark Lewis. The term for this council member vacancy expires in November 2016. The application period is now closed. Here's the list of the council applications received in alphabetical order by last name. Instar Bales, Teresa Benintende Wister, Rodney Bowling, Cornelius Bowser, Vicky Butcher, Umbert Cabrera, Fisnik Nick DeMage, Paul Dosik, Mike Foldenauer, Michael Griffiths, Stephanie Harper, Theodore Kagan, Ben Colasso, John Stan Landis, James Lewis, Kimberly Lobera, Johnny Minerick, Darren Rose, Melinda Neal, Stephen Nisso, Emily Lily Schwarm, Christopher Shamoon, Roger Smith, Anthony Sotil, Catherine Spacone, Dwayne Swainston, and Wendy Wigginton. The public will also have an opportunity to weigh in and voice opinions at the council meeting on December 10th at 7 o'clock. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson reporting on a champion of change for East County Magazine. A San Diego State instructor has been honored by the White House at a Champion of Change event as a veteran advancing clean energy and climate security. Elizabeth Perez Halperin is an assistant instructor in the online professional certificate in the Green Energy Management Program through San Diego State University's College of Extended Studies. She is also the founder and CEO of GC Green, a general contracting firm that provides a veteran-based workforce and construction solutions for energy efficiency and renewable energy projects. Perez Halperin, a member of the North Folk Mono Indian tribe, began by addressing the White House audience in her native tongue. "Part of what I said in my native language is that everything is connected," she said. "In my journey, I'm finding that everything is coming together full circle." She spent more than 8 years in the U.S. Navy as an aviation logistics specialist. Her father was a 20-year U.S. Army veteran. Today, she co-owns GC Green with her husband, Rick Halperin, who will teach two classes in the online Green Energy Management Program at SDSU during the upcoming spring semester. She is also on the Sustainability Advisory Board at SDSU's College of Extended Studies and helps her husband recruit students, especially veterans, as well as design the class curriculum. GC Green focuses on developing a trained workforce of skilled subcontractors and connecting these resources with projects and opportunities for veterans. The company implements training programs especially for transitioning veterans and for veterans who are out of work or underemployed. The firm also outreaches to large institutions and prospective project developers to let them know the benefit of investing both in the green industry and in veterans. "San Diego has a high percentage of veterans," Perez Halperin said. "We want to put them to work. If we don't have projects for them, we absolutely promote both our veterans and students at San Diego State to other companies."
This is a public service announcement for the Mountain Health and Community Services. Mountain Health and Community Services is looking for a happy ending for a Christmas toy story. Serving rural areas of East County and other parts of San Diego for over 30 years, the nonprofit health organization needs hundreds of toys donated to give to low-income children at Christmas holiday parties this year. Usually the organization receives a grant for 400 toys from Mattel Toy, but this year that did not come through. These toys go to underserved kids in Hakumba, Campo, Alpine, downtown San Diego, and Escondido, so they need community help this year to help these children have a happy holiday season. They're asking anybody who can help to provide new unwrapped toys for children of all ages, boys and girls. The organization is also collecting canned and dry foods for the Campo Food Pantry, which helps local low-income families. Items needed include pasta, pasta sauces, tuna, peanut butter, cereals, and similar items. Toys and canned goods can be dropped off until December 17th at the Alpine Family Medicine at 1620 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine, or the Mountain Empire Family Medicine at 3115 Highway 94 in Campo. The holiday parties are always a big event. They include a family meal, crafts, toys for the children, a chat with Santa, and shopping at Santa's workshop. For more information or to volunteer to help the Mountain Health and Community Services with these events, visit www.mtnhealth.org. This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. An Amber Alert has been activated statewide at the request of Washington State Police. A kidnapper and his victim are believed headed for Mexico. On December 4th, 14-year-old Elizabeth Romero was abducted from Kennewick, Washington. She's Hispanic, 5 feet 3 inches tall, weighs 130 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a white tank top, dark pants, backpack, and carrying a pink purse. The suspect is Eduardo Flores Rosales, a 19-year-old Hispanic man. He's 5 feet 9 inches tall and weighs 200 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. The suspect was last seen driving a green Ford Escape with Washington temporary registration. The suspect may be en route to Mexico. If you see the suspect and victim, contact the Kennewick, Washington Police Department at 509-628-0333 or call 911. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy. Fast food workers in over 100 cities went out on strike Thursday, calling on their employers to pay living wages. Locally, strikes were held in Bonita and in downtown San Diego. Nadine Abbott covered the rallies for East County Magazine. She spoke with Raquel Neri, a worker who said she's been at Wendy's for 10 years. After a decade, she is paid $9.55 an hour. "I work 24 hours a week," she said, "and I would like a wage increase." She has to pay all of her costs, including rent, food, and transportation costs on this income, while she raises 7 children. Workers across the nation are asking for the minimum wage to be increased to as high as $15 an hour. President Barack Obama has called for a more modest increase to $9 an hour. Violeta Gonzalez, a community college student, has been working for Wendy's in San Diego for a year. She says she started at $8 an hour and after a year received just a 10-cent an hour raise. Her 15 hours a week of work is not enough to pay her bills, rent, food, and transit fees, she said. Sometimes she closes at night, and when transportation isn't available, she has to walk 15 blocks back home. She is looking for a second job, but has not found one. According to the Center on Policy Initiatives, or CPI, over 1,400 local residents now earn a living wage, which is $29,000 a year for a full-time job. A minimum wage worker can earn just $16,640 a year if they are full-time. The difference is enough to move a family from below poverty to self-sufficiency. Increasingly, fast food jobs are not just for teenagers anymore. Workers need the assistance to make ends meet, CPI found. Peter Brownell, CPI research director, revealed that a majority of fast food workers now receive food stamps to supplement their income. They cost taxpayers $721 million just in California, he says. According to Brownell, the fast food companies can afford to pay the cost of every worker currently paid with taxes. McDonald's alone made $27.6 billion last year with a total profit of $5.46 billion. The company paid its chief executive officer nearly $14 million. Wendy's, where the protest was held today, had total revenues of $2.5 billion and a profit of $7 million, while their CEO received a $5.89 million salary. Now, the counterargument to raising the minimum wage is that a pay hike would lead to fewer jobs in the industry and that the price of food would go up, which could hurt low-income families. Higher wages could also lead to the closure of restaurants and the layoff of workers, industry leaders contend. Jamie Richardson, a senior executive with the White Castle hamburger chain, told CNBC-TV that raising wages to $15 an hour would force closure of half of its locations. He called that scenario catastrophic and said even the lower increase President Obama has called for, $9 an hour, would be damaging for the fast food industry. Acting San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria told East County Magazine that the city of San Diego has already taken numerous steps to increase wages, including adopting a prevailing wage ordinance in the city. That means any workers on city projects will get better pay. He came to the fast food strike to support the workers. San Diego's acting mayor told the crowd of over 100 people that as the son of a maid and a gardener, he gets it, and he came to offer moral support to the workers. He also told activists that more money in the pocket of workers meant more money in the economy and would go a long way to solving the recession. Richard Barrera is secretary-treasurer of the Labor Council and a San Diego Unified School District board member. He said that poverty of the food workers also shows up in schools. Many kids come to school hungry and qualify for school breakfast and lunch programs, and sometimes those are the only good meals these children receive, he said. We talked to Barrera about the effect of these strikes in East County. He said that if Congress increases the minimum wage, the question is whether they will increase it above where it is in the state of California. Then he added, I believe we should be having local community-by-community activities to increase the minimum wage. He pointed out that Washington, D.C.'s council just increased its minimum wage to $11.50 an hour. He added, we could do it here in the city of San Diego, but they could also do it in the city of El Cajon or La Mesa. For the unincorporated areas, the Board of Supervisors could vote to increase the minimum wage if it chose to do so, he added. Now, the state of California has already raised the minimum wage. In July of 2014, it will go up to $9 an hour and to $10 an hour by 2016. By 2016, a minimum wage worker in California would be making up to $19,400 a year if they have full-time employment before taxes. Workers and their supporters held a march in the morning on Thursday. In the afternoon, they held a rally, partly in support of Leobardo Massa, who was fired after he participated in a strike calling for $15 an hour wages earlier in the year by his employer, McDonald's. Massa said he did not know exactly why he was fired, but he suspects it was because he gave a burger to a homeless man, and he says workers are scared to speak out. Both McDonald's and Wendy's declined to comment for this story. The demonstration in Bonita resulted in a confrontation that ended peacefully. The group tried to turn petitions in support of Massa over to his employer, Bob Sutherland, who owns 13 franchises in San Diego. The franchise manager wouldn't take the petitions, so protesters decided to drive to Sutherland's home, about 5 minutes away. They were blocked from going up the street by police, who said it was a private road. There were no arrests or citations issued. Massa would still like to ask his former employer why he was fired, and he wants his job back. Like many workers, he says he's in this fight for a living wage for as long as it takes. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Julian Rudd Falls, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. The U.S. Postal Service is offering a reward of up to $50,000 for information leading to arrest and conviction of two suspects who robbed a mail carrier in El Cajon on Wednesday, November 27th at 5:05 p.m. The theft occurred in the 2400 block of Fletcher Parkway. Both suspects were described as 25 to 30 years old, white with medium build, about 5 feet 11 inches tall. One suspect had a teardrop tattoo under his left eye and wore a long-sleeved dark shirt, dark shorts, black knee-high socks, and black shoes. The other suspect had full-sleeve-like tattoos on both arms. He wore a white SoCal t-shirt, shorts, and black shoes. Robbing a U.S. mail carrier is a federal crime that can result in imprisonment of up to 10 years. If you have information about this crime, call the U.S. Postal Inspectors at 877-876-2455.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch for East County's mountains starting Friday night through Sunday morning. Snow is forecast with up to a foot of snow over 5,000 feet and 2 to 5 inches of snow at lower elevations. The snow level could drop all the way down to 2,500 feet. That means icy roads, so use caution if you have to drive and carry chains on those mountain highways. Also on Friday night, a frost advisory is in effect until 10 a.m. Saturday in inland valley areas, where temperatures could dip to a chilly 28 degrees. Residents are advised to keep pets inside and cover sensitive plants. The storm will also bring strong, gusty, westerly winds to the mountain and desert areas. Sustained westerly winds of 25 to 35 miles an hour are forecast, with gusts over 60 miles an hour possible, the Weather Service warns. A high wind watch for the deserts is also predicted for late Friday through Sunday morning.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Arielle Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. A holiday wine trail will be held for the first time on Saturday and Sunday, December 7th and 8th in Ramona. Guests will receive tastings at each of six wineries, one catered food pairing at each, and their own holiday wine trail glass. Wine trail riders can spread the trail out over the two-day weekend or choose which day works best. On Sunday, there will be live music at Ramona Ranch. Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights rolls out, along with the Snow Festival, on Friday, December 6th at 6:30 p.m. This event is sponsored by the Alpine Chamber, and guests can expect to see various vehicles, anything with wheels, and the family or family pets for the 18th annual Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights. The parade march ends at the Free Snow Festival with real snow at the Alpine Creek Town Center on Tavern Road. Santa Claus will be there, a community Christmas tree, free snow sledding, family-friendly activities, and crafters and vendors until 10 p.m. Local country stores and restaurants will be open for guests. As we know, Santa is busy this year. On Sunday, December 8th, snow and Santa are in the forecast from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the annual Santa at the Lakes at Santee Lakes Recreational Preserve. Besides snow for sledding and visits from Santa, guests can enjoy pony rides, a petting zoo, hay rides, holiday arts and crafts activities, carnival rides, inflatables, boat rides, and s'mores by the fire. The Lakeside Historical Society is hosting its 25th annual holiday home tour on Saturday, December 7th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Home tourists can enjoy a self-guided tour of five unique homes in the Lakeside area, including one with an exceptional view of Rattlesnake Mountain and two Merino Valley homestead cottages with collectibles, Clydesdale horses, antiques, and unique decorations. Ticket sales help preservation efforts and can be purchased from the Historical Society's Old Community Church on Main Avenue in the heart of Lakeside's Historic District. The History Center is open Tuesday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., or you may call their office for information. The Lakeside Museum next door to the Historical Society Church will also be open on tour day for guests to see antiques donated by Lakeside Pioneer families, as well as the Mrs. Claus Christmas resale shop. A staging of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol with 74 student actors dressed in period costumes will be held this weekend on Friday and Saturday, December 6th and 7th at the Joan B. Kroc Theater on University Avenue near La Mesa. The performance includes piano accompaniment and live music by Suzuki Strings. The song God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen will be sung by a 37-voice, all-girl junior high and high school choir in period costumes. Showtimes are Friday, December 6th at 7 p.m., and two performances on Saturday, December 7th, are at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Another theatrical performance in East County this weekend is on Friday, December 6th, the Winter Wonder Jam, held at Cuyamaca College, featuring local bands playing original music. Attendees can bring a donation to the San Diego Food Bank or Toys for Tots in lieu of purchasing a ticket. The performance is from 7 to 10 p.m. Lions, tigers, and bears in Alpine, San Diego's only big cat and exotic animal rescue, has its Christmas festival on Saturday, December 7th, from 12 to 4 p.m. Guests will be able to watch the animal friends open their presents, as well as shop at this event with lots of local vendors, food, entertainment, and Santa Claus. A VIP package is available. Sunset Publications' annual free holiday party is on Thursday, December 5th, with light refreshments, a chili bar, and authors speaking on these titles: Love on a Leash, Pet Therapy, Rock Art of the Grand Canyon Region, and Waiting for Tsunami. The party will be held at the Sunbelt Publications office on Fayette Street in El Cajon during the hours of 5 through 9 p.m. Guest speakers begin at 6 p.m. Faith Chapel in La Mesa presents A Visit to Bethlehem called The Bethlehem Story, which is enhanced by storytellers, bakers, brickmakers, and petting animals as visitors stroll through the town. Showings are Thursday through Sunday, December 5th through 8th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., but guests are asked to show up by 8:30 p.m. at the latest. At the Space Bar Internet Cafe on University Avenue in La Mesa, every Friday is free comedy night, rated PG-13, from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., and is ongoing throughout the month of December. Arbor Day at Mission Trails Regional Park is being celebrated at the Equestrian Staging Area on Saturday, December 7th at 9 a.m. The public is invited to take part in the donation and or planting of oak trees. Volunteers may help with the planting or act as cheerleaders. Volunteers are also needed to pull weeds and help with general landscape maintenance of the area. Some shovels will be available, but it would be helpful if you could bring your own. Gloves and comfortable shoes are recommended. It's a busy day in the park Saturday as Mission Trails Regional Park's tracking guide leads hikers on Saturday, December 7th at 8:30 p.m. on a two-hour dirt time adventure to learn the art of animal tracking and find evidence of critters and their lifestyles, wear long pants, and meet in front of the visitor center. There is another guided hike the same morning, Saturday, December 7th, same location, a little later at 9:30 a.m., called Winter Green World. Hikers get to delve into the sage and chaparral wildlands with the trail guide to learn facts about the plants and animals that sustained Native Americans and today delight modern observers. Additional dates for this repeating hike are on our calendar. The Rancho San Diego Library in El Cajon is holding a celebration of all things Hobbit in preparation for the arrival of the movie The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug. Celebrate the Hobbit is set for 2 p.m. Saturday, December 7th. The Star Party Marvels on Saturday night, December 7th, is an event in which participants can join in the solar exploration with Mission Trails Regional Park's resident stargazer, George Varga, as he scopes in on the Andromeda Galaxy, M31, and companion, M32, the Double Cluster and Perseus, the Pleiades, Seven Sisters, and more. Participants meet at the far end of the day-use parking lot of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground at 2 Father Junipero Serra Trail in San Carlos for a 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. star party. The Sam Johnson Jazz Group will be entertaining at Cosmos Coffee Cafe in La Mesa on La Mesa Boulevard every Friday from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Performances are ongoing until the end of March. The band includes Johnson on electric and upright bass, along with Alan Worthington on guitar, and George Kisas on sax. Nathan Weldon will be performing acoustic folk music at Bistro 60 and San Diego Desserts every Friday evening from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. throughout the month of December. Bistro 60 is located on El Cajon Boulevard in the college area of San Diego. A midweek spoken word event takes place on Wednesday evening, December 4th, at the San Diego State's Malcolm A. Love Library from 7 to 8 p.m. Poet Sandra Alcocer will read from her work as part of the Fall 2013 Hugh Hyde Living Writers Series. Alcocer teaches poetry and fiction at San Diego State University and is the author of Sleeping Inside the Glacier and Except by Nature. Her poems have been published in The New Yorker, among others. Now for some ongoing holiday events. A Julian specialty, the Julian Christmas Train Express, will be running through December 31st, where guests can take a one-mile train ride to an 1870 gold rush mine, with some surprises along the way. Viejas Outlet Skating Rink in Alpine is open each holiday season and winter, where skaters and non-skaters alike may enjoy this outdoor ice rink, which is larger than the famed Rockefeller Center rink in New York, and the largest in Southern California. The Santa Train, the North Pole Limited, is accepting reservations now for its ongoing Christmas rail journey every Saturday and Sunday from December 6th through December 21st. Starting at the Campo Railroad Museum with fun and good cheer, guests will board the Limited. As it leaves the depot, Santa's elves will serve cookies and hot chocolate. An onboard book reading of a popular Christmas story leads up to the arrival at Santa's workshop, where the train will stop just long enough for Santa to board for the return trip to Campo. Santa will visit with all of the children on the train on the way home. Reservations are required in advance. Now, a preview of some upcoming events in the next few weeks. Downtown La Mesa is decorated and ready for its annual Christmas in the Village event, which happens from 5 to 10 p.m. on December 13th and 14th. A holiday parade starts at 5 p.m. both days to kick off the event. This free event, held on La Mesa Boulevard between Spring Street and Acacia Avenue, will feature carolers, horse-drawn carriages, crafts vendors, and street entertainers. The Salvation Army Croc Center's Croc Kids Junior Theater Company presents the holiday classic Babes in Toyland with some fresh new music throughout the weekend of December 13th through 15th at the Joan B. Croc Theater. Showtime is 7 p.m. both Friday and Saturday and 2 p.m. on Sunday. This family-friendly performance features more than 30 local children from ages 8 through 17 years. The San Diego Concert Band launches its 25th anniversary season with a holiday concert at the Joan B. Croc Theater called Joyous Celebration on Tuesday, December 17th at 7 p.m. Under the direction of Roy Anthony Jr., the San Diego Concert Band will perform a variety of holiday and winter season selections, including some band members' favorites from the past 25 years. That's a lot, but it's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festival and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
This is Miriam Raftery, and we have a couple of late-breaking events where we received the information after the Destination East County segment was taped this week, but we wanted to let you know about these really fun-sounding activities. Lakeside's Main Avenue comes alive with the sights and sounds of the holiday season on Sunday, December 7th from 4 to 9 p.m., when the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce will host the 15th annual Spirit of Christmas on Main between Woodside and Laurel. This free, fun-filled family event will include a tree lighting ceremony, visits with Santa, vendor booths, kid activities, food, music, and entertainment by local bands and schools. VA House Outlets in Alpine officially kicks off its holiday season this weekend with the lighting of one of California's largest Christmas trees and a free ice skating performance by regional, national, and international level ice skating competitors. A massive 60-foot holiday tree will be lit up at 6 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th at the VA House Outlet Rink, followed by free ice skating performances by some of the world's best ice skaters. The ice rink will be open to the public immediately before and after the event, with special pricing for children, seniors, and military. The VA House Outlet Ice Rink, which is larger than the world-famous Rockefeller Square Ice, has quickly grown to become one of the most popular holiday traditions in our region, with more than 33,000 visitors lacing up their skates on the nearly 10,000-square-foot ice rink last season. A wide variety of musical concerts are coming up in the Grossmont Union High School District during December, from madrigals to a jazz band, guitar and orchestra performances, and even a dance concert. For a complete list of shows, you can visit our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Just in time for the holidays, El Cajon resident Jackie Bradfield and her 6-year-old stepdaughter Haley have new holiday decorations to replace ones that were stolen. The heartwarming donations came from a secret Santa with help from El Cajon residents Dina Weil and Shirley Johnson. Last week, just after putting up holiday decor, including an inflatable Santa, Bradfute heard a commotion. She came outside to find everything missing, like a scene straight out of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Johnson and Weil delivered new decorations last week, complete with a wreath, Santa, and an inflatable reindeer. The donations came after Bradfute posted about the theft on an online police message board. The anonymous donor who aided in the effort wanted Bradfute's daughter to know that there are good people in the world. Bradfute said she was moved nearly to tears as she looked upon the donated Christmas display. Haley saw the decorations on Thanksgiving Day, thanks to the kindness of community members. "It makes me feel really blessed," Bradfute said, adding, "It feels like the holidays again."
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. The sound of hoofbeats, the smell of sagebrush, the brilliant blue sky overhead. This is the world of my guest today, Gary McClintock, president of McClintock Saddle Works in Descanso, and one of East County's most famous residents. McClintock is to saddles what Willie Shoemaker was to horse racing. Their skills are enormous and particular. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Helen. That's well said and a little overstated, but thank you so much for such a nice introduction.
Oh,
I appreciate that.
Never, Gary, never overstated. I think you're one of the most popular people in East County and in the horse world.
I hope I don't have to live up to that.
You're such a Westerner, but where were you born and how long have you lived in East County?
Well, actually, I was born in Santa Monica, California, so I've lived my whole life in California. Came to San Diego in the 60s for college and have moved out to East County about that same time and kind of felt that this was a nice spot for me, so I've been there ever since.
So you were a city boy.
We lived on the beach, actually, Helen.
Oh, golly.
In a place called Playa del Rey. So we started on the coast of California in the 50s. I was born in 1948, and we lived in a little place called Playa del Rey, which is right on the coast, underneath the airport, pretty close to that.
My goodness, this makes you a quintessential Californian because you have experienced everything from the coast, the beautiful coast, the freeways, the incessant traffic, the smog. And what lured you to East County, to Descanso?
Well, actually, I was here for college at San Diego State.
Oh, yes.
And at that time, I actually moved to East County with a group of friends, college students that needed a place to live. And we found a little place in Pine Valley back in about 1967, 68.
I have seen your custom saddles, and they are stunning. How long have you been making saddles?
Well, actually, Helen, we started in 1973, so this is my 40th year. We're celebrating our 40th anniversary right now. This is actually 40 years of building saddles.
What drives a young man to want to do that?
I think the desire to live out of town was the start. I wanted to work with my hands. I come from a family of dentists who also work with their hands, you see. But I was kind of a kickback of the hippie era and had to get out of town and live in the mountains and be away from the city. And it stuck with me. And I found saddles was something a friend recommended that I could. We were making belts before that. And then the recommendation came along and I went to a school to learn how to build them because it was something I could do on my own, one at a time. I didn't have to be a factory or a manufacturer, which is what we became as belt makers. We got to the point where we were manufacturing belts for Pennies and Sears and people like that. Then I thought, no, I just want to be the custom little maker that I seen down in Mexico, to tell you the truth, down in San Blas, Mexico, on a surfing voyage. We were down in the square there and observed some artisans making belts and handbags and saddles. Well, not saddlebags, sandals, and then handbags. So we had the opportunity to enjoy that and thought, well, this guy has a pretty decent lifestyle. Right here on the coast, he can just do what he wants and sell it and catch waves when...
There's a real cultural context for this. The 1970s are often referred to as the time of the rebirth of the American craftsman. And there was a tremendous interest at that time in the handcrafted item. And actually, who was in the White House then? Mrs. Mondale.
Oh, really?
Made a big deal about bringing handmade pottery into the White House and serving dinners and whatnot on things made by artisans from America. So you were right in that groove. On average, if there is an average, how long does it take to design and make a Western saddle?
It's a good 7-day project. It takes a good 7 days to complete it. As long as it doesn't have a lot of the floral tooling, the carving or tooling, That takes somewhat more time. You could put another 40 hours into that if it was fully carved, you know, with the carving that you see, the floral decoration.
So someone comes to you and says, I must have a Western saddle. It needs to look in a certain way. It's on this particular kind of horse.
Exactly. I get a lot of people that come to me because they can't find first something that's going to work for their horse. So I accommodate that particular type of a horse by fitting the horse, you might say. I go out and take a look at it, which is what I'm going to do this afternoon. I'm on my way to Ramona this afternoon to take a look at a guy's horse and make sure that we get the right size saddle for him. His vet recommended that he come to me because I have a reputation of accommodating that type of a need. So that's where a lot of it starts there. A lot of it starts with people who can't find the style of saddle they prefer, let alone the size seat that fits them in that style with that fit for the horse. So there's three features there that they have to accommodate, and your typical manufactured products don't do that.
You know, when I was researching this topic, I came across a man who chewed the leather and pounded it with a mallet to make it pliable. And I assume you are not chewing the leather, but if you are, don't hesitate to share. Where do you get saddle leather? And do you have a favorite kind?
Well, there's a couple of tanneries left in the United States. The best tannery for that particular type of a vegetable tan leather, it's quite thick leather. It's done back in St. Louis. They do the best quality for saddles. There's been others, and there still are other makers, but a lot of EPA, Environmental Protection Agency stuff, has driven certain tanneries out of different areas like Los Angeles. There was quite a few makers there. A lot of it's being done in China, Mexico, out of the state and imported back, but the particular leather that I use comes out of St. Louis, Missouri, the Herman Oaks Tanning Company. So it's made here in the United States still, and it's just a real good quality leather all the way around. For all the features I need. I mean, I need a certain thickness. I need a leather that will tool easily, mold easily to the tree that I make the saddle upon.
Okay, the tree is the wooden...
It's the wooden frame that's been covered with rawhide. Okay. Rawhide is untanned leather.
Gary, is there any one saddle maker in history who inspired you?
Not an individual, but a company called the Visalia Saddle Company of California. I became, along the way, I got quite interested in historical stuff, California stuff, California Vaquero. I was consulted by a member, a guy named Ibanez from the Times newspaper up in Los Angeles. He requested a saddle out of this old catalog. This is like maybe 1975, 76. And it had some particular decoration on it that was braiding. It was rawhide braiding. And I just loved the look of it. And so from his request, I had to learn how to do all this stuff. And I went to, here in San Diego, there was a gentleman in the mountains out in Descanso named Granville Martin. And I spent time with him learning how to prepare this rawhide and then how to apply it to the saddle and make a nice decorative trim on the saddle, which is what Visalia used to do.
Nice.
And I thought, well, this is great. And so I've done a lot of saddles over the years that have that rawhide trim on it.
Gary, is it fair to say that your saddles are all over the United States?
Oh, absolutely.
All over North America?
Europe, quite a few there. Quite a few in Northern Mexico. I sold saddles to cowboys and vaqueros down in, starting in about Tecate and maybe down as far as Ensenada. And there's even further, about halfway down the peninsula where we filmed the video, Corazón Vaquero, there's a couple of guys down there that I traded some saddles for.
Gary, that's a great segue. We're going to come back and renew this conversation. We're almost out of time. But Gary is not riding off into the sunset just yet. We're going to continue this conversation next time. Sit around, maybe chew some leather.
Probably not, hopefully, right?
Gary McClintock, thank you for coming. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. An Amber Alert has been activated statewide at the request of Washington State Police. A kidnapper and his victim are believed headed for Mexico. On December 4th, 14-year-old Elizabeth Romero was abducted from Kennewick, Washington. She's Hispanic, 5 feet 3 inches tall, weighs 130 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a white tank top, dark pants, backpack, and carrying a pink purse. The suspect is Eduardo Flores Rosales, a 19-year-old Hispanic man. He's 5 feet 9 inches tall and weighs 200 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. The suspect was last seen driving a green Ford Escape with Washington temporary registration. The suspect may be en route to Mexico. If you see the suspect and victim, contact the Kennewick, Washington Police Department at 509-628-0333 or call 911. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.